You are listening to 97.9 The Hill. I'm Aaron Keck coming at you from Booth Park Studios here on East Franklin Street. Victor Lewis is the man of the hour because he has shown up to tell us what's trending in the world. Hello.
Hello. Today we're going to talk about standardized testing, everybody's favorite subject.
Woohoo!
I feel like Scantron sheets are something that really linked so many generations of people in school. We all know the pain, the fear, the terror, and the glory of the Scantron.
I'm going to stand up for the Scantron sheets because you know what it trains us to do? Vote. You go to vote and you get that ballot.
Oh, I know exactly
how
this works.
Fill in the little bubbles.
Yeah.
You
got
to fill in it all the way, but don't color outside the lines or else the machine might pick up your D when you meant C. And yeah.
See,
we know how to participate in our democracy because we had to fill in those Scantron sheets for 13 years.
I don't necessarily hate standardized testing with Scantrons either because it teaches you the supremacy of the Dixon Ticonderoga number 2 pencil.
Absolutely.
But we're going to talk about the SAT and how it is going fully digital. This past year, the entirely digital SAT was trialed for international students, and at this point, just over 200,000 students have taken the SAT in an entirely digital format. Reviews have been pretty good so far. 84% of students preferred the digital exam to the pencil and paper version, but I feel like that's not necessarily that useful of a survey statistic. If you ask somebody, hey, what did you like more, clicking a button or coloring inside very specific lines?
I mean, most people are going to say coloring inside very specific lines if you put it to them like that.
The new SAT adult coloring book coming soon to a Walgreens near you.
This is to that as that is to this.
But it's not like what students say about tests have ever really affected how test practitioners and staff really care about the test. But this is kind of a forced innovation because the standardized testing world was really reeling post-pandemic, and with a lot of colleges making exams optional or not really placing as much weight on the SAT results,
right.
The institution that is the SAT really needed to find ways to move forward, which hopefully for them would include people actually taking the exam, which less people are doing these days, which I think is interesting considering how much weight was put on the SAT at the tail end of my high school career.
I am very surprised that they're only just now going digital. Like, I would have figured this would have happened 10, maybe even 15 years ago. I remember taking the GRE, which is not the SAT, but still the GRE, in 2001, and I took that on a computer with the mouse and the clicky button. Like, that was more than 20 years ago. We're just doing this with the SAT now?
I mean, yeah.
Has it at least been an option for people to take it digitally, and they're only just now getting rid of paper and pencil entirely?
Or at least moving toward it. Keep in mind, we're still in the trial versions of this, but it's not necessarily about accessibility, which is what I'm seeing in a lot of the SAT messaging around it. I had fun going to the corporate SAT websites and seeing their sales pitches about why you should take
sure,
this test.
Yeah.
That is a wild thing that I read, especially, again, given that when I was in high school, this was just a given. No one pitched this to me. No one said, would you like to take the SAT? It was, you are taking the SAT. And then I did that. But now the test is designed and tweaked to be about 45 minutes shorter. And what's attractive to people, especially about the digital format, is not ease of use, but instant results delivered directly.
Yeah.
Which
that
keeps
was
you
good.
Entirely in the SAT pipeline. You take our test here, we deliver you the results, we'll verify them on your transcript and college applications. So maybe the SAT will continue to survive in the modern world. We will see. I'm glad that I didn't really have to do the essay portion when I took it, and it looks like that might be getting somewhat phased out as we make the test a little bit shorter.
Which
or
is
at least
kind
changed.
Of unfortunate because, like, honestly, like, I like the idea of having, like, a standardized, universal way of just, like, comparing all applicants, like, putting them all on a level playing field and saying, okay, here's a thing for you to demonstrate your skill. Like, everyone do the same thing, and we can measure you, like, against each other that way. The SAT is not a great way to do that, though, and the, like, multiple choice fill in the answer thing is not in general a great way to measure that at all. Like, when they moved to the essay, I thought two things. Number one, I'm glad that I've already taken the SAT, so I don't have to go through that portion of it in addition to the other thing. But number two, like, the essay is a better method of measuring, like, someone's skill, I would think, than the fill-in-the-bubble multiple choice.
I would also think that, but it really depends on who is grading it. There is no small amount of comfort to be found in asking a math question that you probably should know the answer to.
It's definitely subjective. Yeah.
I mean, that's what would worry me about a standardized test, is adding subjective grading to it. I don't know. I think that's why I'm such a big proponent of the college essay, as many movies as there are with the college essay being a pivotal part of the plot.
Yeah.
I think it's kind of cool that that is something that has stuck around. I think maybe I want more focus on that for individual admissions to colleges and not necessarily in a let me grade it and give you an assigned numerical value for your effort.
Yeah. The other thing, too, and we're totally out of time, but the other thing, too, about like college admissions, and I think I've said this on the air before, but if I haven't, let me say it now. We think about college admissions as being like a reward for high achievement. Like 10,000 people apply to college and you can only take 2,000 applicants. So somehow you identify like the 2,000 highest achieving applicants, the ones with the best GPA and the highest test scores and the best essay, and those are the ones that you offer admissions to. I don't know if that's the best way to go about doing it, because if you're like a really good college, then what makes you good is the extent to which you can take someone as a freshman and grow them as a senior to the point where when they leave college, they're way, way better and smarter and more experienced and able to get out there and succeed in the world than they were when they started. So you shouldn't be looking for, if you're a really good college, you shouldn't necessarily be looking for the people who are already high achievers. You should be looking for the diamonds in the rough, right? Like, I have lots of potential, even though I may not have like super high SAT scores, I can achieve. And if you're a good college, you can get there.
I would actually refine that further and just say the mark of a really good college, a really good school, would be finding people you can help reach their goals.
Yes, exactly.
If I want to be a music, like, studio recording engineer.
Right. If you're Harvard and someone applies to you who's like some 18-year-old kid who's already like got two patents and a startup, like, and then they go on to fame and fortune, like, that's not a point in Harvard's favor. They've already got two patents and a startup. They're going to be fine no matter what. I want Harvard to take someone who had nothing and get them to a point of two patents and a startup. Then I will say Harvard's a good school.
That is way more impressive.